G'day everyone, this is Benjamin, aka The Terrible Australian, and welcome back to episode 12 of my 2018 Myth Audio Reviews. For this installment, I will be reviewing the films The Girl Without Hands, The King, The Rider, and Hearts Beat Loud. So, let's get right into it. And first up, of course, is the animated film The Girl Without Hands. And the plot summary for this one, which I am once again reading off the Myth Program Guide, is as follows. The title is quite literal. A miller accidentally sells his daughter to the devil. But when the devil is unable to corrupt the girl, he demands her father chop off her hands. Understandably, the girl runs away and eventually meets and marries a kind and handsome prince. Before you can say they lived happily ever after, the prince is called away to war and the girl is left to raise their child alone, a task she proves entirely capable of, even without hands. I've been hearing a lot about The Girl Without Hands for quite a while now. I know actually the film was actually produced back in 2016, but it's only really in the past year that it's kind of been picking up a bit of steam all over the world in regards to film festivals and whatnot. And it was actually one of the films that was up for consideration for the Best Animated Feature Film Oscar earlier this year, but unfortunately it didn't make the final five films, but apparently it was pretty close to getting there. And watching the film, I could definitely see why for sure, but at the same time though, even though there are a lot of aspects about it that I greatly admire, the film was just merely decent for me. And I think the main reason for that was the story itself and how it's sort of presented within this film. Honestly, when I went into it, I didn't expect the film to be as dark as it possibly is, but I suppose thinking about it now, it kind of should have made sense from the title of the film, since it is called The Girl Without Hands. So there's probably a reason why she hasn't got any hands in the film, so. But yeah, it's just in terms of how it sort of approaches its story was pretty dark. And I will admit I was a little caught off guard by that. And especially the film sort of delves into, besides in terms of, I wouldn't say it's an overly violent film, but I mean, it does show that, but it also delves into sexuality as well in a very, in a way that I was also surprised by as well, because I honestly didn't expect this film to kind of depict those in with its story, but and which in a lot of ways I think it, so basically what I'm trying to say is that The Girl Without Hands is definitely not an animated film for kids. This one is definitely for more sort of teenagers and older. But and also, I just didn't feel like the story itself was quite engaging for me as a viewer. Like, it's not to say that it's bad. It's just I felt like I wish the filmmakers kind of did a little bit more with the story to make it a more interesting viewing experience. But that being said, though, as you would expect for a film like this, the animation itself is really beautifully done. And it's quite unique animation as well, which I... because I've never seen an animated film that uses kind of a style like this in how it sort of approaches its animation. And it's so beautifully done. And also the score is really well, is beautiful as well. And the vocal performances from the cast were extremely well done as well. And there's some really, really interesting and compelling sequences sprinkled throughout the film as well. So overall, like, The Girl Without Hands is a pretty solid animated film. It's not perfect, but, and I do feel like there were some, like, the story itself could have been worked on a little bit more, and also the tone of it can be a little uneven at times. But that being said, though, it's still a pretty decent animated film. I'd say it's worth a watch. Like, if you love animated films, especially ones that are a bit more darker in terms of how they sort of depict their stories. And it's not to say that the whole film is dark or anything like that. I mean, the animation itself is just incredibly beautiful and vibrant and colorful. And there are some pretty funny moments sprinkled throughout as well. But it's definitely an animated film for grown-ups for sure. So definitely don't take your kids for this one. But That being said, if I had to give The Girl Without Hands a rating, I give it a solid 3 out of 5. Now, moving right along to the next film, which is the documentary on Elvis Presley entitled The King. And the plot summary for this one is as follows. Boasting a suspicious mind worthy of Elvis's crooning, director Eugene Jurecki, I probably butchered his last name, so forgive me, road trips across the country charting the singer's biographical journey, examining not only the star's life and legacy, but also the nation he entertained and the erosion of the American dream over the 6 decades since his first single. Using Elvis as a metaphor for modern-day America, The King delves into everything from cultural appropriation to current American politics, while also driving from Memphis to New York to Las Vegas. Filled to the brim with interviews, archival clips, and in-car performances, it's an impassioned and comprehensive exploration of a nation still caught in the trap of celebrity. Now, when I went into The King, I kind of expected it just to be just a normal documentary on Elvis Presley. At least that's what I initially thought when I went into it. And it's not to say that's a bad thing or anything. I love Elvis as a singer. And I mean, but I have seen a lot of sort of documentaries and TV specials and all that have delved into his life and career quite a lot over the years. So I was kind of interested to see how The King would approach Elvis's story. And the fact that the film has quite a huge all-star cast of interviewees assembled for this film. You've got Alec Baldwin, Ethan Hawke, Chuck D from the rap group Public Enemy, Emmylou Harris, David Simon, Mike Myers, Dan Ravner, and so many more, like all assembled to be interviewed for this film. I thought, okay, that's kind of interesting how getting all these people together, but I mean, it is Elvis after all, so. But as I was watching it, not only was this film about delves into Elvis's life and career, but it uses his, as the synopsis says that I just read, it uses his life to also explore like what the American dream actually is. And in a lot of ways, Elvis's rise and fall is kind of a metaphor for the American dream, like both the positives and the negatives, and also delves into like how, where the country was at the time when he first broke out, to where the country is, the United States is now, decades after his death. And in a lot of way, like, it's a lot of ground to cover for a documentary. And in my opinion, that's what kind of really made the film stand out compared to other Elvis documentaries. Because not only was it delving into Elvis's life, it was more an examination of the American dream itself. And also dissecting it and deconstructing it as well, which was really fascinating for me as a viewer. And when you kind of watch the film, you can definitely see that a lot. And how, like, when Elvis had a specific part of his career, and then you kind of see, like, where America is in regards to, like, in a way, basically what the film is doing is, like I said, it's sort of charting his whole career and then pinpointing, like, where America is now or today in regards to how his career progressed. And it's really fascinating stuff. And in a lot of ways, it really elevated the film for me, because there were a lot of things about it that I just found completely fascinating. And it was interesting kind of hearing. There was one thing what I really appreciated about the documentary was they even interviewed people like who were very critical of Elvis. Like Chuck D, for example, is very critical of Elvis Presley in a lot of ways. And the fact that they brought him in to talk about his thoughts on Elvis was really fascinating to me. But we got a couple of other people who do that as well. And there's also kind of talks about like in regard, like things happening in that are happening in our world right now. Like, cultural appropriation is one of those kind of topics that has been greatly discussed about and has divided a lot of people about over the past year or two. Like, so, and the film kind of delves into one aspect of that. Since Elvis kind of, like, was very influenced by a lot of sort of blues singers and R&B singers and soul singers, and it kind of delves into, like, him appropriating, you know, African-American music for his own gain. And that kind of stuff was really fascinating to me. And it was interesting in that regard, like I said, for a film about Elvis, not only, you know, showcasing the positives of his, you know, life, of what he did as a singer throughout the world, but also the critical aspects as well, which to me just really made it even more and more interesting and even-handed documentary. And also, everyone who gets interviewed in the film brings an interesting perspective on Elvis, both as a man, as an entertainer, and also, like, the musical little performances that happen throughout the film were also really well done as well. And also, I mean, you get all the great archival footage and of his performances and interviews. And to me, that, of course, you know, I'm a sucker for stuff like that. So that stuff was always going to appeal for me. But overall, The King is just a really great documentary. One that, in my opinion, is one of the big surprises of MIFF for me. I mean, I just expected just a totally kind of a solid, if typical, Elvis documentary, but ended up getting something a lot more from it than just being that. And for me, that it's the main reason why I think everyone needs to check out this documentary, because it's just, I'm like, it was not what I expected at all. And also it has a lot of interesting thematic elements to it. So if I had to give The King a rating, it's definitely 4.5 out of 5. It is a great documentary that I highly recommend everyone to check out. Now, moving on to the next film, which is the modern-day Western drama, The Rider. And the plot summary for this film is as follows. South Dakota Bronco rider Brady's promising career was cut short with a kick to the head from a horse. Now he's grappling with his post-rodeo identity and sense of masculinity, and seeking solace from a friend and former mentor, Lane, whose own fall from a bucking bull left him quadriplegic and unable to speak. Working at the supermarket by day and drinking by night, Brady struggles with what it means to be a man in a mule. I probably said that word wrong, so forgive me. Given additional weight by his alcoholic gambling father and 15-year-old sister Lily, who is on the autism spectrum. Now, I've been hearing a lot about The Rider for probably about a year now. I first became aware of the film, like, I believe late last year, when it became a surprise nominee at the Independent Spirit Awards. Like, a couple of the big major films, like, big major independent films that were sort of, like, were sweeping award season that in those few months. Like, the ones that everyone suspected to be nominated were nominated for Best Feature. But then all of a sudden, The Rider was one of the surprise nominees. Like, it just, I'd never heard of The Rider, and it just completely came out of nowhere. I think nobody expected that film to get as many nominations as it did. It got 5. I mean, even though it didn't manage to win, the fact that it got 5 nominations, while other, you know, well-known and more popular independent films weren't even nominated for Best Feature, was kind of a feat of itself. And that made me kind of keen to really check out the film. And also hearing all the great buzz and reviews and everything about that with the film. So when I finally got to see the film at MIFF, I have to say that I felt that it lived up to the hype for me. I mean, I wasn't as blown away by this film as everyone else does, but at the same time, it's still a very compelling and beautifully made film in a lot of ways. The director of the film, Chloe Zhao, I probably butchered her name, so forgive me. She did such a beautiful job with this film. Like, what really struck me the most about the film is that all the actors in the film have never acted before. These are all non-professional actors who are real people that she met, and particularly the real life Brady Jando, who plays the lead in the film. Like, this film is his story. Like, the story about how she created this film is really interesting, because she was making another film and wanted to get writing lessons, and he met Brady, and he taught her how to write. And then when she started talking to him and getting to know him, that, and then he told her story about that he used to be a rodeo rider, but due to an injury from a horse, he was unable to do that anymore. So Chloe Zhao was so amazed by the story that she went and decided to make a movie on his life. And not just, you know, have a bunch of well-known actors play the role, she wanted everyone, him and also his real life family and friends, to be a part of this film and star as themselves. And when I heard about that, that just found it really interesting. Although sometimes when you cast non-professional actors, especially ones who are playing real life versions of themselves, it can be hit and miss. We kind of saw that earlier this year with Clint Eastwood's film, the 1517 to Paris, because that film was based on a real life event, and Eastwood decided to cast the real people as themselves in that film. But unfortunately, that didn't work out well. So, but luckily though, it works a lot better in this film. And I think because what makes it work is that Zhao knows how to get really strong performances out of her cast. And everyone does a really great job. And there's a naturalism to all their performances, because they're not playing characters. They're essentially playing themselves. But there's a naturalism to the performances that really elevates the film. And we go on this Brady's journey, and it's such a moving story. And we can also get why he is the way he is, because, I mean, now that he can't be a rodeo rider anymore, it makes him question a lot of things. Not only himself as a man, but also, like, his identity as well, because him being a rodeo rider was his identity, and that's what made him feel like a man. But now that's been taken away from him, he becomes a bit of a lost soul, and we do feel for him throughout the film. And like Brady Jando, I probably butchered his last name too, so forgive me. He did such a great job with his performance. It's such a beautifully layered performance as well. But everyone in the supporting cast is great as well. And Chloe Zhao's direction is just gorgeous. And also the cinematography is sublime. Like, this is definitely one of the best shot films I've seen so far this year. Like, every frame is just beautiful, and especially capturing that sort of the landscape of where it, you know, of country, you know, of the US countryside is just gorgeous. And it's just a really well done film. I can definitely see some people maybe a little disturbed by what happens in the film, because the movie is set around, you know, rodeo riding and, you know, horses and that. And not to say the horses or anything were treated bad, but because I know Zhao wanted to make this as believable and as honest and realistic as possible. But there are sort of scenes where I can sort of, I mean, I grew up in the country, so I've seen a lot of this stuff all my life, so it doesn't really bother me as much. But I can definitely see some scenes bothering other people though, and I can totally get that, because it's not some of those little scenes, not to say aren't the easiest to watch, but that being said though, I think if you are able to sort of get past that and just take the film as it is, I think it's just a really beautiful little film, and one that I totally recommend everyone to check out. So if I had to give The Rider a rating, it's definitely 4 out of 5. It's, like I said, it's not the most amazing film I've seen this year, but it's still a great little one nonetheless. So now moving on to the fourth and final film for this episode, which of course is the music-fiend comedy Hearts Beat Loud, which stars Nick Offerman, Kiersey Clemons, Toni Collette, and Ted Danson. And the plot summary for this one is as follows. Frank has raised his daughter Sam alone in Brooklyn since his wife's death. As serious-minded Sam prepares to head to UCLA med school, Frank proposes that they turn their weekly jam sesh into an actual single. But are they even a band? Frank and Sam's songs express their emotions about their diverging lives. For Frank, things are ending. Sam's moving out, his record store is about to close, and the gentrification has claimed the dive bar owned by his best friend Dave. But hearts are beating anew. Frank's for his landlady, and Sam for a gorgeous artist. Now, I've been hearing a lot of really good things about Hearts Beat Loud for a while, so it was no brainer that I had to see this film when it was playing at MIFF this year, because I've heard nothing but really great things from everyone. And from the looks of it, it looked like a sweet little movie, and I love movies that are centered around music, so that was definitely one aspect of the film that really appealed to me as a viewer. And having seen the film now, I could definitely say 100% certain that the film definitely is that. I found Hearts Beat Loud such a charming, sweet, and nice, entertaining, and funny film that I just had a really good time with from beginning to end. And I'll say this though, as much as I do love MIFF, and I love it with all my heart and soul, a lot of the times when I see a lot of films at MIFF, a lot of them are very heavy films in terms of their themes, their stories, and their drama. Like, and I've seen a lot of films that are very dark as well. So when you kind of see a lot of films like that quite a few times over MIFF, sometimes you need to watch something that is a bit more lighter, a little bit more fun, and one that just makes you feel gooey inside after you watch it. And for me, Hearts Beat Loud definitely fit that bill for sure. And it was definitely one of the high points of the MIFF for me, mainly because it's definitely one of the most enjoyable films that I saw at MIFF. And it's not to say that nothing else I've seen wasn't enjoyable, but it was one of those films, like I said, it just has a sweetness to it that was kind of refreshing in between all the sort of really serious and dark films that I was seeing at MIFF. And I appreciate the film for that. Like, and also it helps that you got a great cast in this film, including both Nick Offerman and Kiersey Clemons, who have great chemistry with each other. You totally buy them as father and daughter, and they're sort of their own kind of subplots throughout the film are both really well done and compelling. And also it's really well written. And also the music scenes, like the scenes where they're writing their own original songs and they're performing them, are just really well done. The songs themselves are great. Like, that's kind of the key thing about a film when you're making a film centered around music. You better make damn sure that the original songs that are going to be performed in the film are great. Because if they're crap, then the film is just basically going to fall flat on its face. But luckily that co-writer-director Brett Haley was able to achieve that. And like, the songs themselves are just great. Like, I just love all the songs, particularly the title track of the film, which I thought was really wonderful. And also the supporting cast are great as well, like Toni Collette, Ted Danson, Blythe Danner. They're all really good in their roles. But for me, at the end of the day, it really is Nick Offerman and Kiersey Clemons' show. They're just wonderful. It is just a charming gem of a film that, like, it may not be up there as one of the best films that I saw at MIFF, but it's still a great little film that was definitely what I needed as a release from all the kind of big, serious, dark films that I saw at MIFF over the 2 weeks that it was on. So I really enjoyed this one. It's definitely a highly recommended one, and it's a total crowd pleaser as well. I don't think you'll walk away from this film without having some kind of a smile on your face. That's the kind of film that Hearts Beat Loud is, for sure. So if I had to give this film a rating, it is definitely, without a doubt, 4 out of 5. I really enjoyed this one a lot. Alrighty, that's the end of this 12th edition of my 2018 Myth Audio Reviews. I hope you guys all enjoyed it. And keep a lookout very soon for episode 13, in which I'll be reviewing the films Hagazusa, A Heathen's Curse, Pope Francis, A Man of His Word, Jimmy Barnes, Working Class Boy, and Undertow. So keep a lookout for that, and I'll see you guys later. See you, everyone. Bye.